First of all, I would like to thank the organizers for the kind invitation to speak here at this workshop. And I have only one fear, of course, that I might have the privilege to have left Belgium and never going back. So, but that we will see in the near future. But thanks anyway for the invitation.
So will you say something about the journal?
Yeah, but should I do that right now or?
No,
yeah,
that would be great. I think.
Oh. Yeah. So my topic is of course informatics and more specifically power laws and applications to social networks. And we founded a new journal with Elsevier. The first volume is appearing this year, and so I can start with. It is only a few minutes, you know. So the new journal is that size. It is electronic as well as printed. I took three copies of the first issue that's here. And the focus is very broad. As long as it's information science and some quantitative aspects with it, it's good. Of course, the quality should be there. That is, of course, the big requirement. The history goes back to 1989, around the time I started the first ISSI conferences in Belgium. At that time, they were not interested in organizing a journal. It was before the internet, of course. And, well, okay, 2 years ago, I published a book on Lotkei and informatics. And then I said, look, I have another idea. And then I threw this up again. And then after 3 years of study of the feasibility, the downloads of articles and so on, study of other journals, the increase, but I will tell you a few things about it. So it comprises informatics. It's good that I start with this one. Informatics comprises all kinds of metrics, bibliometrics as bibliographies, libraries even, science policy for scientometrics, citation analysis, research evaluation. And then, of course, a new topic, which is webometrics, the metrics of the web, intranets, internet, social networks, just such as citation, collaboration networks, and so on. You understand this is then a new field. The evidence, you don't raise a new journal when there is no growth of the field. And there are studies done in JASIS, Journal of the American Society for Information Science, and since 1999 they call it also and technology. The field has grown in terms of number of papers, number of authors, average number of references, average number of authors per paper. So the co-authorship has increased. And for that reason, JASIS from 1999 on has increased its issues per year from 12 to 14. But the delays are even still there. You see, that is not solving the problem. But anyway, there is a lot of interest. JASIS, however, is a bit more general, let's say. It accepts also general information science articles. Now, concerning the journal Scientometrics, is more devoted to citation analysis and science policy. They studied 50 volumes at that time, 50th anniversary. They conclude the increase of the number of authors and the fact that they more collaborate in the sense also of average number of authors per paper. So the same conclusion as in that other paper. However, there is a doubt that at that time, the hardness of the field is there. So we should be careful. That sometimes we think the papers are not so good always, you see, so we should not think that the field is a hard science yet, you see. So that is a warning. Anyway, Scientometrics from 2005 on increased its yearly issues from 9 to 12, so which is an indication again. He and Spink studied the authorship in JASIS and GDoc, foreign authorship. I think for American they mean not American, for GDoc I'm not so sure. And prove that their share is larger and larger. So the field is more international than it used to be. So don't forget, of course, that most of the articles appear now in electronic journals. So besides citations, web citations, you have, of course, the new feature of downloads. And that means, of course, new informatic topics to study, not to mention network aspects, of course. We could say that downloads are electronic versions, of reading or photocopying an article. Those last things were never studied because it was practically impossible. Now, that downloads are studied very heavily. They studied downloads of some articles I published as guest editor in information processing and management. How well were they downloads and so on. So they also, one looks at the repositories for downloads. So downloads are studied in the open access area as well as by publishers. You see, they for their own quality measurements. Yes. So it is clear that the extension of Informetrics to the electronic and web activities gives a boost to the challenge of data gathering and, of course, data management in the field. So the, in general, the creation of the information society is responsible for the growth in the field. And hence, that is why I raised, I asked for the foundation of a new journal. And this year is volume one. So we have already 4 issues. The first volume is finished. So in a few months, we have the volume 2. That's it I wanted to tell you. And thank you for for having the opportunity to mention this new journal. Something interesting is here on the H index, you know. But it's another hype that exists only 2 years. And what I'm doing? I'm sorry. I have no screen, so I have to look there. Okay, again, then talk on Lotkayan Informetrics. It is Lotkayan Informetrics is dealing in 2 dimensions with sources and items. But first I will tell you what one-dimensional informatics is, that is studying one topic, like examples enough, of course, number of authors in the field, in a field, number of journals in a field, articles in a field, references, citation in a field. For instance, how do they grow? That is the thing. Borrowings in a library, number of websites, hosts, web citations to a paper, in and out links to from a website, number of downloads of an article. These are all one-dimensional aspects, and they are, you can do many things of it, of course, but in general, you are interested in the growth in time. And the exponential growth is the first to think of, certainly for new topics. All new fields grow exponentially. Otherwise, there is S-shaped growth, and I was interested to see if, I'm not saying that everything that is S-shaped is old, that is another thing. But I was interested to see some if there are already existing some S shapes in the internet. I am not saying that I covered everything, but everything I found was still purely exponential. Now this is a curve, but it's coming from a printed paper. There is no update, but I have another source so that curve, but not based on that, is updated. But that comes in a minute. The number of web servers, so that is the number of computers that offer websites, versus time, up to 2001, you clearly see an exponential increase. But I said it was a printed paper. But 1 month ago, I found this on a website. And I checked at the level of 2001, we are about at 27 million. And that is in agreement with what you see here, you see? Okay? Because web servers is too, eh? I mean, you have to take the same definition. It's a very important problem how to define things. But I checked, so the magnitude is about the same, so I can compare this with this. This thing I cannot explain, but it's certainly an exponential growth of the number of websites until, 2 months ago. What about the number of hosts? That is the computers linked with the internet. Eh? There are much more of them. We are at that range of about, I can't see it right, about 500 million. There is a funny thing here. You can see there is a disconnection almost, but that is there is nothing to do with the thing itself. At a certain time, those persons changes again the definition of host, you see, because of many connections are made through virtual hosts like proxy servers and so on. So I don't know the exact definition, but anyway, whatever definition you take, you see it continues to grow exponentially. So, or you take this definition and you have an exponential growth like that, or it will be a little bit higher. You see, but that is not the point. What is the definition of growth? What is the definition of host, I'm sorry. So it is an exponential growth. Now, what is two-dimensional informatics? Well, that is, of course, taking two of those one-dimensional attributes together, but then that is not enough. For instance, you have seen we have number of authors in a field, number of articles in a field, but we should also indicate then authors, which authors are producing which articles. There must be a connection between the two, otherwise you don't have two-dimensional informatics. So there is a kind of a function from the source set. The ones that produce, the authors in this case, are the source set that produce articles, and we call that the item set, henceforth. Such a system I call an information production process. But there are examples, you will see examples that go far beyond the information field. And I give you some examples. I start with information things. Authors produce articles. So these are sources, these are items, okay? This is a connection function. These are journals producing articles also. But articles can be sources too, sources of citations to and from, references or citations. Books can be borrowed, number of borrowings. In linguistics, we have words as types. There they use the term type instead of source. And the use of the word in a text that is the items is called the tokens. Websites have hyperlinks in or out, that is like citations to and from. Websites have web pages and links. You see, we could go far to demography. Cities, villages have inhabitants. Employees have a production or have salaries. Why do I mention that? Well, in general, you could say that, I come to that, that all in these cases, you could always say it's kind of philosophical that few of the sources will have many items and many of the sources will have few items, you see? Saying otherwise that it is a very skewed distribution, but I come to that later. That is exactly what this Lotkaian informatics is all about. But first I have to define how to measure such two-dimensional things. Well, there are essentially two ways to do it, and they are equivalent, as a matter of fact, as you will see in the formulas coming on. First, we have a size frequency function, and that measures f of n is the number of sources with n items. Okay? Number of sources with one item, that will be a lot. Then with two, with three, and so on. G is a rank frequency function, ranking the sources in decreasing order of production. And G of R is then the number of items in the source on rank R. That means, formula-wise, that if R and N match, that means if N is G of R, that means N is the production on the rank R. So all sources with N or more production constitute the first R sources, okay? So that formula is clear. But I, as in econometrics and also probability theory, I work continuous-wise. So we work with continuous functions, replacing these numbers by densities. And then we have the same formula with an integral, of course. And that means when you take derivatives, you can have that function. That means the equivalency, because when you know the size frequency function, you can calculate the rank frequency function. But when you know the rank frequency function, you can calculate the size frequency function. So in a way, they are equivalent. But nevertheless, it is interesting to deal with the two types. In econometrics, you only see the function g, as a matter of fact. What can be an example of a size frequency function? Well, I told you in general, you have a very unequal situation. That is always the case. The f and the production, it is always of this form. Now, there are many types of functions, of course, but one of the simplest is a power law. And so that was defined by Lotka in 1926 in terms of author productions. And so the f of n is a constant divided by n to the power alpha. Most classically, alpha is 2, and it will be a turning point in Lotkaian informatics, But in general, we could say alpha is between 1 and 3, and in networking, we find even values up to 4. That has a big consequence, because that is a high exponent, and there's a consequence with it. Going back to the rank frequency function, we can prove that this function in a continuous setting is equivalent with Zipf's law. And essentially, that is the same power law. That is a power law. As a model, it is the same, but it means different things. This is the ranking. And the beta here is not alpha. It is 1 over alpha minus 1, as you can prove when you prove the equivalency of both laws. Zipf's law was introduced in linguistics. The origin of Zipf's law is not so clear. Lotka defined it in a clear paper in the Journal of the Washington Academy of Sciences, right there on that paper. Zipf, in fact, only promoted the earliest mentionings of that law, not called Zipf, of course, go back to 1913. So in an old paper of Condon, a Frenchman. Zipf promoted that law in the connection of linguistics. If you look at Zipf's law in econometrics, they call it their Pareto's law. And that is already a funny remark, because econometrics, linguistics, informatics, I also showed you some demography. They are all the same laws. So that is very strange at first sight. When you take the cumulative rank frequency function, this is called Bradford's graph. You have that graph. You have an S shape if alpha is smaller than 2, straight going to an asymptote in alpha 2, and alpha bigger than 2, it goes up. So that shows already the turning point alpha is 2 in Lotkaian informatics. Of course, you can put things on a log-log scale. Every mathematician, it's trivial for mathematicians. And when you put this, you take the log, you have a straight line. So power laws go to have a straight line on a log-log scale. And I checked in the literature some evidence that in networks you find, because this was a topic I looked especially for network, that in two-dimensional informatics you really have Lotkaian law. So that means power law. I found these things in papers of Dabik and Huberman of 2001 and 2002. And these are all log-log graphs. Proportion of the sites, you could also say the ranks of the sites version the number of pages, okay? Always there are few sites with many pages and many sites with not so many, with few pages. Sites versus users, also the same thing. And then very interestingly, of course, the proportion of the rank of the sites versus their outlinks, okay? The lengths pointing from the site, and you see here, straight line, so links pointing to the site, in links. So it is very clear. And if you study the literature further of Adamic, Huberman, Albert, Barabasi, and many other, mainly physicists, they study what we call social networks, that is citation networks, collaboration networks, of course the web, internet, intranets, and so on. And in all the publications there is no doubt that they all perform power laws, so law of Lotka, if you want. It is, of course, not only found here. The obvious example is Lotka's law in terms of author production. Lotka only studied first authors of papers. But you can also study look at all the authors and give them a total score. That means if you have a paper of 3 authors, each author gets a score of 1 for being author of that paper. If you do that, it is called the total scoring system, you still refine Lotka's law. There is another way of doing it. Well, Lotka only looked at the first author. You could call it a kind of a sample, huh? In a way. And so he found that law of Lotka. There is another way, maybe I have time, maybe not. You could look at it when an author publishes, when a paper is published with 3 authors, each author gets a score of 1/3. And that is called fractional scoring. In a way that is more fair, because the total weight of the paper remains 1. In the other case, the total weight is 3. Okay? So all papers count for the same weight. But then you have the problem, of course, what is then the total fractional score of an author when an author has published 20 papers? A few on his own, a few with two authors, a few with three or four. So there is a problem of modeling the fractional frequency distribution. I have done that 5 years ago, and I have a picture of that with me. It's very complicated because, you can understand it's not possible, but almost for every rational number, you have to have a formula. But as you know, there are an infinitely many rational numbers, so you have to apply tricks to make it a finite problem. But maybe I come to that. Now, this is very well known. A function is called the scale-free property of Lotkaian informatrics. A function is called scale-free if for every c bigger than 0, there is a d bigger than 0, independent of the variable, such that f of c of x is d of f of x. So essentially, up to a constant, you go to another scale, you find the same function. Okay? So that is the essence. It is quite trivial that when you apply that to a power function, you have that property. That is a triviality. However, this is an old theorem that when you have any continuous, let me just say, when you have any continuous scale-free function, then you can only have a power law. So the power laws are the only ones with that property. Okay. So when I add the word decreasing, then I end up with x to the power alpha in the denominator. So that is an equivalency. And so you could also say that Lotkaian informatrics is scale-free informatrics. Okay. And that is used in the following thing. You could give an explanation of Lotka's law based on exponential growth of the sources. And based on that, I made an interpretation of Lotkaian systems as self-similar fractals. Is everybody aware of fractal theory? Everybody or nobody? Or somebody? A few? Little bit? Okay, so I will introduce a little bit of fractal theory very intuitively. Fractals and fractal dimension. Well, a very simple thing. Suppose I have a line piece and I cut it in 3 equal parts. So I divide it by 3 and I want to fill it up again. It is quite trivial that I need 3 of these small line pieces, okay? It's quite trivial. So 3 to the power 1, and then I say the dimension is 1 of this line piece, okay? It's quite trivial. Suppose I do that with a square. I cut the sides in 3 equal parts. Okay, again. Of course, I need now 9 squares to fill up the original one, that is 3 square, and 2 is the dimension. Everybody agrees that the dimension of a square is 2. You could, I could not draw it, but you could do the same thing for a cube. Okay. Now, what about this? This is called the triadic Koch curve. Huh? So what is the trick here? We divide again the line piece into 3 equal parts. But we are doing the following game. We do this, okay? Right. Yeah? So this is the device. And when you do that, you do it again. Divide this in 3, and then you get 4 parts, but again here, again here, again here. This is then the third level, or the second level, if you want. And again you do it, and again you do it, and again you do it, and it never stops, of course. Now I'm doing the same trick. I go back to my square, for instance. I divide by 3. I need 3 to a certain power to get my dimension. Well, I do the same thing now. What do I need now? Well, I divide by 3, and I need 4 pieces now, okay? Which is 3 to the power d, which I don't know for the moment. So I call the dimension of this curve, I call d. Now, of course, this equation leads to d is log 4 divided by log 3. Which is, of course, a proper fractal because it is strictly between 1 and 2. So the Koch curve is a proper self-similar fractal. That is clearly from the construction. And with what we call fractal dimension, log 4 divided by log 3. Now, what has this to do with Lotkaian informatrics? Well, it is the following. I found an old theorem of Naranan published in Nature in 1970. You see, it's a long time ago. Another Anan proves, he's an informatrician, of all a letter, and the name was not there, but in the Indian informatrician. In India they say librametrician at the time. He supposes that the number of sources grows exponentially in time, say with the growth rate A1. And within each source, also the items grow, and we suppose for simplicity that they grow in the same pace in every source. And then we say that growth of the items in the source is another exponential function with rate A2. They do not have to be the same. Then you can prove that that system is Slotkhaeff. If f of p denotes the number of sources with p items, we have this power law, decreasing power law. But it is proved that the alpha here is 1 plus the logarithm of A1, the growth rate of the sources, divided by the logarithm of the growth rate of the item. So that is interesting. There stops Naranath's theory. I did not so much about it. Just say, well, but this is fractal theory. But I didn't see it. Look at what is happening with the Koch curve. The number of line segments grow here times 4, here times 4 squared, grow exponentially to the function 4 to the power t. If you ever level, you call it t, okay, or n, doesn't matter. So the number of line pieces grow exponentially with s 4 to the power t. When you take, the length is always divided by 3, by 3, by 3, so 1 over the length grows as a power law, 3 to the power t. And the fractal dimension is log 4 divided by log 3. If you take that comparison with the source and item growth in a Slotkhaeff informatrix system, we can conclude that a Slotkhaeff system is self-similar fractal, and its fractal dimension is given by the logarithm of the growth rate of the source divided by the logarithm of the growth rate of the items. So that is the fractal dimension of a Slotkhaeff informatrix system. And of course you remember that the result of Naranan was that the alpha is 1 plus that value. So we have that alpha is 1 plus the fractal dimension of the system. This was earlier seen in a work of Mandelbrot. Mandelbrot is the inventor of fractal theory. Mandelbrot in his book, he found that relation in the connection of artificial texts, a kind of random text, you know, random generation of letters and spaces. Okay, so in a way, and that is that is also part of informatrix, because you can consider that as an informatrix system. So this generalizes in a way the Mandelbrot finding. So this is what is Slotkhaeff informatrics is all about. Now, I can briefly give you some ideas of applications. After 20 years of study, I had so many results also of other people. I found it a mess, and so I wrote a book on Slotkhaeff informatrics in 2005. So there is a lot to say. It's only power law. I'm only using power laws. And so the most interesting things are what I showed, of course, but there is a whole chapter on concentration theory. And that is, as I told you, there is a lot of inequality. Few persons have many papers, very skewed. So that calls for an inequality theory, but in a sense that exists already, because it was invented exactly 100 years ago in econometrics. The Lorentz curves, I don't know if you know that, they were invented by Lorentz in 1905, so 102 years ago. We have applied that, but we have also some new results also, typically for informatrix. But we have applied econometrics to inequality theory and information science. Then I applied Slotkhaeff theory to the fractional, which I said already, the fractional modeling of authorship. So if you count authorship of a paper fractionally, that means, so if a paper has four authors, each author gets a credit of 1/4. So what is then, when you have an author with 15 papers, that can be a score of, it can be a score of 7/3 or something like that, I don't know, depends on how many authors. So Q is a rational number, and so what is the number or the fraction of authors with that rational number of articles? Now that is a very intricate thing. You can understand that it is that there will be many authors with one paper or two papers, but there will not be many authors with a score of 7/8, you see? That is combinatorial, probabilistically, a very small chance to obtain. Now what could I do? First of all, I assume the law of Lotka for the number of authors with certain number of papers. That is the original definition of Lotka, there is no discussion about that. But I also assume the dual Lotka law for the number of authors per paper. Okay, so you have the number of papers per author, but you have the number of authors per paper. Now, there is a funny thing about that. Normally, papers and books are written by not so many authors, not 20 or 50 authors. But what you have is, in general, I draw it continuously, that maybe in chemistry, the top is on 3 authors per paper, you see, or something like that, okay? Only I found, in mathematics, that the modus is again on 1, okay? So there you have that most of the papers are written by one author, although closely followed by 2. But it's typical for mathematics, maybe also in the humanistic sciences, but not in chemistry and biology, the top is further away to 2, 3, or 4 even, or sometimes even much higher. So in that, if that is the case, Lotkaian infometrics is not applying to that law, but you could then call it an approximation, and in mathematics it is certainly true. What I do then, so if you have one paper with 5 authors, that author gets a score of 1/5 in that one paper. Then you count the number of papers that author has made, and you apply convolution theory. And then you get, for every Q, theoretically, a value. But it is another formula for every Q, and there are an infinite number of Qs, of course, rational numbers. So what I do is I make a small mistake, and if a paper has one author, that author gets a credit of 1. If a paper has 2 authors, credit of 1/2. If a paper has 3 authors, credit of 1/3. And if a paper has 4 authors, I give a credit 1/4. But also when a paper has 5, 6, 7 or more, I give a credit of 1/4. So it is a small mistake, but that gives me the advantage that I can only have rational numbers with denominators 1, 2, 3, or 4. And I have a finite problem. Though a very intricate problem, because there are, and I limit also for values between 0 and 2. Because if you go beyond 2, the combinatorial possibilities are too much. Okay, so and then I end up with a rather amazing curve, I think. This is the observed fractional frequency distribution for mathematics up to 2005. The whole math reviews, let's say. Up to 2005. It is worked in collaboration with Professor Rao from India. He has collected the data. The thick line is the practical one, you see? And the thin line is what we modeled for all fractional values, you see? So here is the value 1/2, and that is the only one which is not so good, you see? But if you look at all these things here, look, this is the value 1, occurs most. So this is not a value of the rational number, it is just the order of the rational number that can occur. Okay? The first one is the first possible rational number is this one. I start with that and so on.
So 9 equals 1. Is the rule
here? Yeah, it is the 9th rational number that was possible. Okay, so that was the thing.
Okay.
They are not equidistant. That is the way we draw the graph. So that prediction is almost perfect, but also here you see.
quite well.
This was just amusement. What I'm saying is, when Rousseau told me, you cannot never apply local laws to these kind of things, I said, what? I can apply it twice. You see? In the original setting and in what I call the dual setting.
It comes out like that.
Dynamics. A person in Wolverhampton asked me if I could add some dynamics to Lotkaian theory because he wanted to apply it to the evolution of networks. Viv Cotte is his name. And I published a paper, and I had in the second issue, I had my first article in the Journal of Informatics. It's called The General Evolutionary Theory of IPPs and Applications to the Evolution of Networks. What do I do? Well, as I told you, you have items and you have sources in a continuous setting. And the densities of the items, I apply, on it I apply a transformation. Continuous, derivable, and so on, all these kind of things. The same thing for the source, but another transformation, of course. So the new rank frequency function has this equation with, indicated with stars. So this is this. Huh? And then, of course, G is the new density, so that is applied to G. This is the equation. When you know the G star, you are interested in knowing the new size frequency function, okay, the F star. You can prove that. The new F star has this functionality. So you can see it here. You need the derivatives and so. It's not so long, it's rather easy to prove that. Where can we apply that? And later on I will apply also power laws to those transformations. First of all, when psi is the identical function, so the sources remain the same, okay? There is no change in the sources, but their items are evaluating, okay, in a way. Then we have an example of linear three-dimensional informatics. An example of that is the sources have items, and these items, for instance, are used. We call that positive reinforcement. For instance, we have web pages, they have hyperlinks, but the use of the hyperlinks gives another informatic aspect of it, you know, which is more skew. When you say that web pages and hyperlinks are very skew, few web pages have many hyperlinks and vice versa. When you look at the use of the hyperlinks, when one clicks, that is even more, the inequality is even more reinforced. So that is an example of that in the case of identical thing. Another thing, in libraries, you have library subject categories, and in these categories you have books, and these books are borrowed. So when you go from there to there, you have a skew situation. But when you go from here to there, you have an even more skew situation. You see? Because few categories have many books, you see? And vice versa. But again, few books are borrowed many times, and vice versa. So the combination gives you a very skewed thing. And that is what we call positive reinforcement. Now back to the general case.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry, but with positive reinforcement, expect it to be a loop, you know, this is more like a causal chain, so to speak, but not necessarily like a loop.
Well, it is so that these are sources and these are items, but for these sources, these are other items, you see, and that situation is more skewed than this situation.
That's it, it's not a loop.
Two times the sources are the same, but these are the items, and these are other items, and that is a more reinforced, a more skewed.
Do you think of situations where there would be a loop?
But it's not possible, eh? How would there be a loop?
Well,
you mean going back here to that one?
Yeah, for example, if the use of hyperlinks would lead to the creation of more web pages or something like that.
Yeah,
this has been argued.
Yeah.
For example, in the search engine, right? So because you have more hyperlinks, you
Seen
more.
Right.
Because the search engine will get higher, and if you are seen more, then you're going to get more links.
Okay. Yeah, that's correct, because hyperlinks are pages too, and you can go back to pages again.
That's not true.
Yeah.
It's been argued.
Yeah, that's correct. That's interesting. In the case that I apply power functions to the transformations, and still keeping my Lotka law, all the previous formulas, so if I apply those transformations to a
a Lotka function. What do I get? Well, you get a new Lotka function. And the function is the following, another constant that is not important. It should be a G star here. To the power delta, and the formula is 1 plus B times alpha minus 1 divided by C. So the delta is only dependent on the B divided by C, not B and C separately. So it is only dependent on the division of the evolution and the sources and the evolution of the atoms. You see. The quotient of the thing. The theorem from here that inequality is trivial, namely, your new Lotka exponent will be smaller when your evolution in the sources is smaller than the evolution in the items. And bigger when it is bigger and equal when it is equal. Now that one has studied in a paper in the Madrid conference by Viv Cotte in the proceedings. And that this relationship is confirmed in all his studies on parts of the web. He studied academic sites, Wolverhampton and so on. You should look in the proceedings. And he confirmed that this is really true, except in one case, but then he found that the thing is not Lotkaian. And that was a funny thing, we are not through it. Lotkaian system. I'm not sure I understand it fully. You know that he told me, he had an explanation, of course, for my formulas to be okay. You must be in a Lotkaian framework, of course.
Thank you.
So, a normal Lotka law, when you do a log scale, and you know this, that, okay? As I told you. Now, he found in one case, he found something like that, straight up. Then it went like that. It went like that, and it went like that. And I was in email contact with him, and he is saying that. This is a very strange thing. And he is saying that the reason for it is probably the automatic creation of web pages. For instance, if you have a form to fill in with classical links, you fill it in each time you have a new web page and with the same links, and so artificially the same links are created. And in that sense, we could say this is machine-made, and hence it is a deviation of a kind of a deviation of a social network. But I hope I am saying this correctly.
This is well understood and used broadly in search engines as a signature of spamming.
Yeah. He says it's not spamming. I asked
search
him.
Engine spam.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
People who would go to a site like the one you've described, and they have robots that generate postings, for example, on message boards with links to their spam websites.
That's actually called the cynical marker.
That was my
search engine optimization.
I don't know that literature, but that was my first remark. And he's saying that's not, in this case, that was not the reason. Because he could tell me why he had that bug. So he might have found that it's work of another person, so I cannot discuss that. But first guess would be that. And certainly if you find that is certainly also, in some cases, one of the possibilities, yes. But it is nice to remark, at least, that due to mechanical things, let's put it that way, you can deviate from power loss, you see. And that is a scaring remark, maybe? I don't know. And a further application, thank you. In a further application, I studied together with Russo last year. I take psi, the identical function, so I keep the sources as they are, but I let them grow in the number of items. That means that my item function is a power law with V and certainly C bigger than 1. Now, if you remember the function, if that is an identical function, so that is 1 then, okay? So then this is 1, so then you get this formula, okay? And now we always are in that situation here. Because 1 is smaller than C, okay? Yeah. That means that the new delta, the new Lotka law exponent is smaller than the old one. And since B is bigger than 1, we have that the number of items is growing and growing.
you should understand this as an evolution in time. So this is applied once, but you can apply it a second time, second year, third year, fourth year, and so on. So that means delta is getting smaller and smaller, and the minimum production is getting higher and higher. That means if you have a normal system of auto production in a certain topic, that means that, as I said, the most authors will have only one publication in the topic, and then again. So you're always, in classical informatics, you always start at one. But in these cases, we look for examples where you don't start at one, but where you have a Lotkaian system, but starting at a high point of number of items. And there are very strange examples. And then the question is then the Lotkaian exponent small? And we looked at several things. Country sizes. We looked in Gazetteer, DE, 2 years ago, 237 countries. Obviously, there is not a country which consists of one person, isn't it? So starting point is certainly at a high level. So we found an alpha 1.69 for the best fit. And Rousseau is a workaholic. So he was once on a holiday in Malta, and he found nothing better to do than counting the number of inhabitants in the 67 municipalities there. And then he fitted it, found the 1.1.
Yeah, definitely never vacationing with that.
No, I didn't need to do that. He found one. Why do I mention this? Let's say that we consider alpha equal 2 as a turning point, as I said already. So I consider everything below 2 as small. You can discuss on that, of course. So 1.69, 1.12. Database sizes on the literature in a paper of Hood and Wilson in JSIST, I think, 2003, on the topic fuzzy set theory in the 20th largest databases on this topic. Okay, we found 1.09, very small. A little bit out of this topic is the unique documents in those same 20 databases, and then we found 1.33. So I hope this confirms the theory a little bit. And very briefly, that is 7 years ago, I think, I applied Lotka's law to the modeling of the cumulative first citation distribution. That means the distribution over time at which an article receives its first citation. You understand? You have a group of articles, you study the time after publication, of course, at which time the article gets its first citation. Now that is rather interesting because it is an important indicator of the visibility, and the article at that time switches its status from unused to used, obviously. And I think it is a better measure than the classical immediacy index of Thomson Scientific. You know, there is already a lot of criticism on the impact factor, but there is even more criticism on the immediacy index. The immediacy index is the impact factor, but where the two time periods are the same. So due to publication delay, this does not have much value, at least to my.
I mean, nobody seems to be using it.
Yeah, right. So this is another measure, but a totally different one of immediacy. I will not take long time. So I call the distribution of T1, that is the time of the first citation, over a group of articles. We will study the cumulative first citation distribution. So the cumulative fraction of all papers that have at T1, at least one citation. Rousseau had some results on that, but he had to apply two different differential equations. In fact, what you have is, I can already show you, you have one type of graph like that. Don't forget it's cumulative. Okay? You have a concave example, and you have an S-shaped example. Okay? So you should be able to grasp the two models in one function, and in one explanation, of course. And I always try to do that with my Lotkaian theory. So what I say is, the density function of the citations to an article, t time after its publication, is a decreasing exponential function. And of course, the density function of the number of papers with A citations in total, and that is the number of sources with A items, well, that follows a lot count, right? And I combine the two in a proof that is not so long. At first, I must normalize it and so on. And I end up with that function. The cumulative first citation distribution is, there is a gamma parameter here in order to cope with the never cited publication. Okay? So gamma is the fraction of ever cited publication. Once upon a time, ever cited publication. So you see here the obsolescence parameter and the Lotkayan parameter. That function is indeed concave if alpha, again, you see the turning point 2, if alpha is smaller than 2, and S-shaped if alpha is bigger than 2. And again, I show you then the examples. This is a proof. A database on Russian literature. Time unit is year. You get this one. And here you see, on the data, you see only 30% is cited. But time must still go on. So you can even predict what it will be in infinity. So in the limit, you go up to almost half of the articles will be cited. And you see the concave functionality. This is JAX-to-JAX citations. The unit time is 2 weeks. Journal of the American Chemical Society. Data collected by Rousseau. And I could fit it with my model. As you see, it fits quite well. And the alpha is bigger than 2, of course, and you have an S shape. Okay. So that is what I wanted to tell you about Lotkayan informatics and what you can do with it. For instance, in connection of networking. You see. So that's my talk. Thank you very much.